Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I doubt that the San Francisco 49ers, the multi-billion dollar organization that they are going to make massive decisions about their future based on what they see over these next 5 hours of our life, especially when it's a football game that quite frankly, it doesn't matter for either team. Both teams are dealing with all kinds of absences. I think that it's likely that we're all having a conversation that the 49ers aren't.
Maybe, but it's not just about this game. It's about what the season has been as a whole. And the season, as you laid out, hasn't been terrible, but it's been nowhere near what it was last year. Whether that is Purdy's fault or the injuries around him, and it's probably a little bit of both. Purdy hasn't been as good, but he also doesn't have the team around him. This isn't just, are these next 3 hours going to determine if we're willing to pay Brock 50 or only go up to 40? It's a piece of the pie of what the whole season has been.
I mean, that's the suggestion. If somebody says he's playing because they're still trying to gather info and they're still trying to audition and decide if that's what they want to do. Real quick, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. Twitch and YouTube powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Granny, look, I'm not going to climb the mountain of trying to tell people that this year was something that it wasn't. But here's what I will kind of offer to everybody. And I saw Albert Breer tweet this out yesterday, and I totally agree. There are four quarterbacks in the NFL who are, quote, different. Just put them over here. Patrick, Josh, Lamar, and Joe Burrow. And even Burrow has had to go on a four-game win streak to go 8-8. But here's a number that I want to throw at everybody that, to me, is something that we need to start accepting about quarterback play. We want them to be superheroes. We want them, when things are crumbling around them, to be so amazing. They throw a cape on, elevate everybody, and off you go into the sunset anyway. There are literally, you have too many fingers on your hand to count the people on planet Earth who can do that. 2 years ago, Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold were teammates on a bad team that couldn't decide which one of them they hated more. And they kicked both of them out of town. 2 years later, these two men have combined for 74 touchdowns, and I would argue both are about to finish in the top 10 in the MVP race, which tells you what. Quarterbacking is always about your surroundings. Stop making this a Brock issue. Oh, he's a product of his environment. Can't elevate. That's quarterbacking. And we can do this all over the league. Does CJ Stroud suck now? Are those Texans supposed to just be like, nope, that's not the answer? No one's saying that. Tua. We could have a conversation around Tua. We could have a conversation that changed from the beginning of the year to the end with regard to Jalen Hurts. Justin Herbert, amazeballs, yet never won a playoff game in his life. And now he has Harbaugh, and so they're going to the playoffs. But no one wants to say anything about that. I just think that Brock is no different than all of these other guys. There are a lot of good quarterbacks in the league who you want to be your starting quarterback, and you're going to have to sit with the idea that, yes, things are going to have to be going well around him for it to be perfect.
Is it bad that when you bring up Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold as examples of you got to have things around you be solid in order to be a good quarterback, unless you are just the magician that Mahomes is, or as talented as Lamar or Josh Allen or whatever the case is? Joe Burrow, by the way, who, if I had an MVP vote, would be my MVP. He's been incredible this year.
He's been incredible.
But my mind first goes, when you talk about Darnold and Baker, my mind first goes to, those are like the two most team-friendly quarterbacks in the NFL this year. considering the contract that they're on?
Well, for the moment, because Sam is about to get rebooted.
Yeah. And Baker is going to get a new contract in a couple of years, too. And if he continues playing like this, he's going to go up there right now. But if you're a team that has the option to pay not one of the elite quarterbacks, elite quarterback money, but they're not that elite quarterback. The track record of success there is like almost zero. Like in terms of winning a Super Bowl, it's almost zero.
I mean,
more often than not, it craters your entire team.
Well, to make that the bar, I would respond to that and say is a bit unfair because Lamar Jackson is potentially going to win. By the way, quick aside, should be winning his third MVP this year. Go ahead, get mad at me, look at the numbers, and if you're a Josh Allen person, you literally have no argument. There is not one number where he is beating Lamar this year, but I digress.
Done more with less, but whatever.
If you say so. I think both of them have a pretty decent surrounding cast. Both of them have a good running back, and both of their receiving cores are eh. But whatever. Not the point. The point is if that's going to be the marker, then Lamar has failed, and Josh has failed, and Joe, while he has been, has failed, and Brock has been as far as Joe. That's all I'm saying. I just don't think that it's as offensive as we've sort of made it sound, this idea that as a quarterback in the NFL, your coach needs to be good, your offensive line needs to be good, your weapons need to at least be passable, your team needs to be healthy and playing well. It is not always the other way around, that simply just, oh, you have good quarterback, therefore you have good team. That is incredibly rare. Incredibly rare. And I will give that to Lamar, and I will give that to Josh, and we'll give that to Patrick, even though he's actually doing it with defense this year. But the bottom line is, that doesn't really exist, and I do think that paying quarterbacks who are in the next tier is a hell of a lot better than going on the search again. That's what I would argue.
Yeah, how are the Cowboys feeling about that?
Well, I don't know.
Jaguars feeling about that?
I don't know. Those guys both got hurt.
How are the Giants feeling about it a few years ago?
And I think you're naming quarterbacks who are worse than Brock. I think you're, you know, how do the Lions feel about it? Let's talk about them. They're giving $52 million to a quarterback who many throughout the last 3 years would find very comparable to Brock Purdy.
They're also in a different era of their roster. Like,
for sure.
Niners are looking at biting the bullet on a $50 million per year to their quarterback when they're already paying eight other people on their roster top 10 money.
Fair point. At the same time, I'd argue Jared Goff is a great person to look at for those of you who are either worried about or want to debate Brock Purdy. Jared Goff has been to the highs. He's been to the Super Bowl and fallen short against Tom Brady. Brock has been to the Super Bowl and fallen short against Patrick Mahomes. And then Jared went through a period of time where it was like, oh, you can't play football. We don't want you on our team anymore. We're going to pay a bunch of money and draft picks to get you the hell off of our team, in fact. And they did, and now he's back on the top of the mountain. He's the second-rated quarterback in the league. He's probably going to be the one seed, and he might go to the Super Bowl again. Is that good enough? I don't know. If he gets to the Super Bowl, he'll probably be the second-best quarterback in the game. But that's a good comp, and I'd argue, yes, you want that guy over getting a search party together to go find a new one.
Yes, of course. You would rather have a good quarterback than a bad quarterback.
Well, that means paying him.
I know, but the difference with the Lions conversation, and this is going to become kind of circular, is, well, Goff has the best offensive line in the NFL.
Absolutely.
And he has Amon-Ra St. Brown, and he has Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery until recently.
And a good coach.
And he, you know, when healthy, you have Aiden Hutchinson. But wait until Hutchinson is due for a record-breaking contract on defense. Wait until the Lions have to decide about Jahmyr Gibbs. Do they want to make him the highest paid running back in the NFL? And then you get to all those contracts, and then your quarterback is up, and I know it's not a fair comparison because at that point Goff will be pretty old and Purdy is still pretty young, but are you willing, when you have so much money tied up everywhere else, to give your quarterback that money if it means saying bye to Penei Sewell because he's going to walk out and you can't afford to pay him as the highest paid tackle in the NFL anymore?
That's the job of a front office. And I would rather have a good quarterback than a great anywhere else, because it is the most important player on the field. And you can all look at the teams that don't have a quarterback and see where they end up every year. You want to play like the New Orleans Saints play football? Knock yourselves out. You want to play like the New York Giants play football? New York Jets? Knock yourselves out. Cleveland Browns? That's what it looks like. But even
the Cleveland Browns got into this mess because they paid a quarterback an absurd amount of money isn't good.
But they paid that quarterback all guaranteed for a lengthy period of time,
Niners,
which is not what the 49ers are going to do. Gene in Oakland wants to weigh in. Hey, Gene, thanks for calling. What's up? Jake Hutchinson, our guy on the Niners beat, is going to join us in about 7 minutes. Hey, Gene, what's going on?
Hey, fellas. Hey, listen, Willard, I just think you're too anxious to throw max money at Purdy when he's really not proven himself to be worth it. I mean, you're talking about elite money for a quarterback that has not proven himself to be elite, and frankly, I'm not sure he can prove himself to be elite. He's shown that if you put a bunch of stars around him, sure, he can do what he needs to do. He's got those other skills, seeing the field, you know, accuracy and so forth, but you know, the problem is, once again, if he's willing to take $35-40 million, I think we're all on board. But he wants $50-60 million. That's going to detract or, you know, hurt our situation to where we're not going to be able to put all those stars around him.
Gene, before you go on to a new topic, let me respond to that. First of all, I'm not anxious to give him any money. The time is now. There is no time other than now. Anyone who wants Brock to wait and play for $1 million next year with no extension, you're living in a fantasy world. He won't do it, and the Niners will suck. So there's that. I'm not anxious to do anything. It's simply what needs to be done. And then my question to you is, if I go to your side of the fence, what is it you would like to do? So you want to give Brock 35. He says no. Your next move is what?
Okay, so listen, why not consider other options? I'm going to bring it up again.
Okay.
I mean, if Sam Darnold, all right, has proven himself to be able to do what Brock was able to do with the proper pieces around him, and he's got the physical size and skills that Brock will never have, and maybe he's willing to work to play for $40 million. Why wouldn't you at least seriously consider that?
And we're up against it, Gene. I'd love to talk to you more about this, and I know we're going to have an opportunity to do it over the next handful of months. So thank you for the call. Here's my answer to that. Please understand that signing Sam Darnold next year costs you more money against the cap. Even if he's making 40, that makes more money, much, much, much more money on the Niners cap next year than Brock would, because Brock would max out at about 10 because he still has another year on his rookie deal. So that actually hamstrings you way more with regard to the rest of the roster. Secondly, I love the idea that Sam Darnold has now, quote, proven that he can do what Brock can't. They both have done the exact same thing the last 2 years. When surrounded by great coaching, health, great players around you, a team that's playing well, they're going to produce MVP-type numbers. Sam is doing this year exactly what Brock did last year. Same exact thing.
You'd rather have Brock than, if money was equal, you'd rather have Brock over Sam Darnold?
I would. Yes. But again, money is not equal. Sam will cost you more next year than Brock. Maybe not the year after that, but
next
for those
year,
of you
right.
who are worried
yes.
about keeping Dre Greenlaw or any of these other, Deebo Samuel, Aaron Banks, becomes a markedly harder if you go after Sam. Just the facts.
But the contract down the road would be cheaper for Sam than it is.
Now we're 2-3 years down the road in the NFL. To me, that's a million years from now. We're sponsored by Crystal Geyser Alpine Spring Water. We can continue the conversation next with our man on the Niner beat, Jake Hutchinson, right here on Willard and Dibbs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs.
Can you sing with that voice?
Literally. I did Daddy Warbucks in middle school, and it was talk singing.
What I'm telling you,
N-Y-C. sing.
Not singing.
On 95.7 The Game.
Something like that. Say hi to Grandy, everybody. He's in for dibs. Happy New Year to each and every one of you. We say it now because we want to duck back out of here and show back up in 2025 after this game tonight. Warriors and Cavs, Niners and Lions. Warriors in action with Warriors Live right around the corner. In fact, less than 2 hours away. We're going to hand it over to E-Dog. Evan Giddings will take it over. It's all presented by Xfinity Stream Sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. And this is the kickoff show presented by Habas Law. You've been wrong. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabasLaw.com. We're talking it out live here in Santa Clara, and our man on the Niner beat here at 95.7 The Game is Jake Hutchinson. And good time to talk it out because it's going to be another interesting offseason ahead. Jake, how are you, man? What's going on?
Hey, I'm good, fellas. I'm good. It's unfortunate that this game really means nothing, but, yep, you know, sometimes that happens in life.
Yeah, it's relaxing, though. I'll tell you that. We're going to go in there and have a good time tonight. There's food, there's drink, and, you know, just like people are all looking at their fantasy apps and all of that stuff, it's much more relaxing.
Yeah, you get to watch some fourth-string offensive linemen. It's everybody's dream.
I mean, okay, fine. You just made it serious now with that call. Like, should Brock Purdy be playing behind this line? What's your take?
Yeah, he should. I think at this point, this is the last game. I would expect. I mean, maybe they play him in week 18, but this is the last game you get a real chance. And for one reason alone, I think it's worth it. The Lions play so much man coverage, and that's been the one thing that has just really destroyed the Niners schematically this season. I think if there's any team that you want to line up against going forward, you want to get these reps against the Detroit Lions. And if you can do anything, if you can move the ball on offense against the Lions, I know their defense is decimated, but if you can, you know, attack that scheme that has troubled you all season long with some pretty bad offensive linemen, I think that bodes pretty well going forward and at least gives you information even if it doesn't go well.
Jake, you're talking about the offensive line and some fourth stringers and some names that I'm sure a lot of us haven't even heard of. I know you, though, describe yourself as a sicko, so you know all of these guys. Tell us who should we be keeping an eye out for on the offensive line, because there's, again, going to be a lot of guys that most of us haven't even heard of. Who do you have your eyes on tonight?
So even as a sicko, I won't pretend that I've watched Austin Pleasant's tape, and it appears that he is not a creative player, but a real NFL player who is now starting at left tackle, from what we can tell. And if he goes out or they rotate, it'll be a man named Charlie Heck. So that's not exactly a more believable name. But that guy, Charlie Heck, was with the Houston Texans. Nick Zickel, I think, is probably going to be their left guard. He went to Fordham. He is best known for being Brock Purdy's roommate. He's kind of ridden his coattails a little bit there. So those guys don't really have me excited. I think if Drake Nugent, a guy they bumped up on the practice squad, he went to Michigan. He's been a guy that we've talked about as a potential, you know, center option moving forward. If he gets any time tonight, I'd have my eyes on him.
Jake Hutchinson with us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game, getting ready for Lions and Niners. Jake, I made the comment a handful of minutes ago that with regard to Brock Purdy and his future, I think that all of us are having a conversation that the Niners aren't. Like, I just don't feel like they're debating it the way we are. So, to the best of your ability, warn 49er fans what to be ready for this offseason. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, they're going to extend him, and it's going to be a number that's going to make some people vomit. And if they don't vomit, they're going to be a little nauseous, or some people are going to say, I don't care. And so that's just what the number is going to be. But the real number that Brock Purdy is going to make is probably going to be closer to Jordan Love. And if you look at Jordan Love's contract, it's not really, you know, what is it? I think $55 million a year.
Right.
It's really, he's getting more like $35 million a year for the first 4 years. That's kind of how it breaks down on the cap. And then his fifth year is something like $75 million. And the way it works in the league is once you get to that number, unless you're the Dallas Cowboys, who are going to pay Dak Prescott like $80 million next year on the salary cap, they're not exactly doing well. If you're not them, what you do is you restructure that money and you extend it. So instead of having $70 million hit your cap, you rework it and you keep pushing it down the line and you keep kicking the can because the salary cap keeps going up. And I know this isn't a sexy topic, but the reality is Brock Purdy's actual money the 49ers are going to have to face for probably the first four-ish years of the deal, it's going to be more like a, you know, 40-ish, 35 to 40-ish million sort of guaranteed, maybe a little higher than that depending on, you know, how the market looks. But it's really going to be more like that number, which I think if that was the number people were hearing, it would scare you a lot less if you're saying, okay, Brock Purdy's a $40 million quarterback, not a $65 million quarterback.
Jake, I think I'm going to speak for, I'm going to generalize a bit, but speak for Niner fans. I think some of the concern when you're paying Brock Purdy, however much money it is, you know, near top of the line quarterback money, it is, well, can you fix everything else that's wrong with the roster? I mean, we just got done talking about Austin Pleasance and Nick Zakel and other offensive linemen, and I know this is a unique situation because of all the injuries, but how would you respond to a Niner fan who says, I'm just not comfortable paying Brock that much money because there's holes everywhere else, and if they do that, are they able to fix the roster elsewhere? How would you answer that?
Well, I'm not sure they can fix the roster. I mean, they're going to have a hard time fixing the roster as it is, but that's not because of Brock Purdy. Like, the reality is you have to look at Brock Purdy on his own, and Brock Purdy is a young, ideally, I think you would still think, ascending quarterback who's been faced on a team with a lot of injuries, a team that has not answered schematic challenges very well. And he hasn't played at his best, but he's also, you know, made plays. Is Brock Purdy a top five quarterback? Is he Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes? Of course not. But is he an above average young quarterback with the potential to get better and still be good for, say, 5 years down the line? Absolutely. The rest of the guys that you've paid, where you got Trent Williams and George Kittle's been steady and Fred Warner's been steady, but you also paid Javon Hargrave like $20 million a year. You've had Deebo Samuel hitting your cap. You've got a lot of these veteran aging guys, and they're taking up a lot of cap space. And so that, I think, is where the money is coming from, and that's where you get limited. I still think with the way the NFL salary cap keeps going up and sort of the maneuverability you have, you can probably go get, you know, you can make an attempt to go get like Drew Dolman, like a center from the Falcons, who's a guy that they liked, who's a local kid who went to Stanford, and he's like 25 and on the right track. You can make a real opportunity and go after a guy like that, but are you going to be able to take swings at, you know, three or four of those guys in free agency? No, but that's just the reality. That's where the 49ers are in the life cycle of these deals, and the reality is they're going to have to do really well in the draft, where they'll probably have about 10 picks, and that's how they're going to have to rebuild the roster, and that's kind of what the Los Angeles Rams have done.
Jake Hutchinson is with us here on Willard and Dibbs talking Niners as we get ready for the last home game of the year. Jake, what does the wide receiver room look like next year?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think the number one is Deebo Samuel a part of it? I could see that going either way. They save a little bit of money if they, you know, post-June 1 him. Post-June 1 is a post-June 1 cut where you can sort of designate that early and give a guy a chance to go and make a free agency decision. But you know, I think they're facing sort of a situation where he, you know, they're not saving a ton of money, so he could be on the roster, and I could really see that going either way. I think they should move on from him. It's sort of stagnant with what he brings. He's not a real receiver. From what I've seen, he can run a limited route tree, and he's dynamic with the ball in his hands, but he really doesn't play the position, the modern position of receiver, and the 49ers keep facing man coverage, and he can't beat it. So I could really see that going either way, but I think you've got Brandon Ayuk, you've got Ricky Pearsall. Obviously, we don't know what Ayuk's timeline is going to be. You've got Juwan Jennings, Jacob Cowing, and then, you know, they might either have to go get sort of a mid-tier wide receiver for cheap and or, you know, draft one in sort of the middle later round. I think that's a way that you have to look at it. There's a lot of really talented young receivers in college every single year, and it's worth always, you know, picking one up, especially if you have 10 picks.
Jake, one of the other big questions that I'm sure we're going to be debating for a lot of the offseason is what the Niners do with the trio of free agents on defense. One of them, Mooney Ward, inactive tonight. Another one, Dre Greenlaw, who is going to be shut down for the final two games of the season. And then Talanoa Hufanga, who's missed a lot of time this year but is back and healthy and playing pretty decently now. It feels like the writing kind of on the wall with Mooney Ward because of the extension they handed out to D'Amador Lenore. So I would imagine you think he's not on his way back. But specifically about Greenlaw and Hufanga, what do you think their futures are?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they prioritize those deals. Greenlaw coming back and looking great and then having the injuries, I think sets them up in a spot where both sides will probably be able to come to a deal, you know, something where 2 years, I would guess, probably like in the 10 or so, 12 million range. It could be anywhere from, you know, 4 million to 6 or 7 million. I could see that being the deal, and I think that just makes a lot of sense. You saw Greenlaw. He lets them play defense in the run game, and they really can't play run defense without him next to Fred Warner, and that was pretty glaring. I would expect that those two sides find a way to get a deal done this offseason. Hufanga will be interesting, you know, what his price range is. I mean, he was technically an all-pro, and listen, he's a good guy, but he is not a cover safety. He's a guy that can play in the box and is dynamic, and there's no question they missed him this year, given that Jair Brown hasn't been what they want him to be. He's a guy where if I don't know what his market's going to look like. He's a really interesting player, and I think they would want him back if they can do it for cheap, somewhere $4 million or below. $4 million even seems high. But if it's like $3 million, they might get a deal done. He could go either way, but he obviously helps them in the run game, but isn't a complete safety.
Jake, I'm sure in their mind's eye, Christian McCaffrey plays a bunch of games next year. But somebody who can at least somewhat mimic his production, I would think they would want to bolster themselves with some people behind him. Mason is a free agent. Garendo sits here. What does that running back group look like next year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's going to be a pretty competitive market, I would imagine, for Jordan Mason, who's a guy that ran so effectively, and teams in the NFL are copycats, and what you saw this offseason was all of these veteran running backs getting paid and all of them pretty much succeeding in new schemes, and it does feel like there's sort of a resurgence in valuing that running back who has proven himself, and I wonder if they just get priced out of Mason, given that, you know, other teams are probably going to have better opportunities for him and will probably be willing to pay him more. I think Elijah Mitchell, a guy that's just been so injured so always, like, do they just take another one-year flyer and say if he's healthy, you know, he's in this room? I think they're going to probably have to look elsewhere other than Mason because I think other teams might value him more. But they can also, you know, they've been decent at getting undrafted free agents, late-round rookies, and I think that's another option for them to approach that too.
No conversation about the Niners is complete without a question about special teams. So I'm curious what you think about Jake Moody and his future, because it was pretty clear how frustrated Kyle Shanahan was after he missed, a 41-yarder against the Dolphins in Miami, and the way he addressed it post-game, it kind of felt like he was over the whole Jake Moody experiment. But he came back out this week leading up to this game and talked about how he's, you know, still defending and still believes in Jake Moody. Do you think his time in San Francisco was coming to an end, or the Niners are going to go into next season with Jake Moody as their kicker again?
Well, Kyle Shanahan probably has more disdain for special teams than almost any other coach in the NFL. In his mind, he just wants the field goal to be good from wherever, and it's this funny thing of him being an offensive coach who hates special teams and then puts so much faith in all of these kicking, getting a field goal, and then like has no interest in really the operation of it. And maybe that's harsh on Kyle, but I think the reality is that he just doesn't like special teams, doesn't enjoy it. The only time they've run a fake his entire time on special teams is when Mitch Wishnowsky just did it on his own, and then it was called back because of penalties. He's not a guy that likes to innovate. He wants special teams to be sound and safe and do its job. And so when it's wrong, he cares so much more about that than when it's right. So for me, I think Jake Moody, I'd be surprised. I'd be pretty shocked, honestly, if they just outright cut him. That doesn't make any sense to me. I think the fact that he had a pretty bad ankle injury and he came back quicker than the initial timeline was expected. And he was productive his rookie year, but obviously it looked shaky. I think what they'll do is maybe consider bringing in a veteran kicker to compete with him. And then you just see how that competition goes. But I would expect, honestly, that Moody is still their kicker next year. He's really good on kickoffs. He was pretty good before the ankle injury. I think you give him an offseason to get back healthy, and we'll see. And maybe they just bring in somebody else that's a veteran. But I think Moody is still their kicker next year, if I had to bet.
Jake, what does Kyle Shanahan need to do differently next year?
I think he needs to take a long break and, you know, maybe not go the Aaron Rodgers route, but have a deep spiritual journey. You know, maybe go to New Zealand, go to Middle Earth, find himself somewhere and sort of evaluate where his scheme is at. Maybe you bring Bobby Slowick and Mike McDaniel and you all have discussions about how your offenses have struggled and, you know, and you bro hug it out. But you really need to go into the lab, go somewhere weird and just, you know, take a breather and say, all right, how do I beat man coverage? Is my scheme evolving? Because it has felt stagnant this year. It has felt like in years past he built on something. They would add a motion that really elevated the offense. And this year it felt like their whole plan was, all right, well, Christian McCaffrey's going to come back and save us. And he didn't. And teams just kept throwing the same game plan at him, and they had no other plan. So I do think Kyle just needs to say, all right, I'm gonna shut football out of my brain for a second. And then I'm going to ask some big questions and just be open to unique solutions, be a little bit more malleable, maybe be more practical. Maybe you get rid of Kyle Juszczyk and you just go with 11 personnel going forward. I don't know. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I think Kyle has to take a look in the mirror and say, you know, what is the real answer? What are the options going forward? And be open to things that he might traditionally not be open to.
Do you think the coaching staff looks the same? Are there a couple of people who are kind of on the fence right now?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do defensively. You know, he's talked, you know, given Nick Sorensen a vote of confidence, but I don't think anyone would express a lot of, you know, admiration for the 49ers defense or their scheme this year. That said, Kyle likes to keep it pretty, you know, tight and limited and be simple on the defensive end. So I'm not sure if they will move on from Sorensen. I do think that if Jeff Ulbrich, a guy that they kind of wanted last offseason, if he's available, you know, you might just say, all right, well, he's a guy who's proven. We're going to go with him over Sorensen, and maybe you go that way. But I do think they're going to need to add some more young talent. I think in years past, that's been one of Kyle's strengths. And this year, I'm not sure that they had that, where they added a lot of good young coaches this year. I'm not sure I've seen that, and I'm not sure that there's been a real boost in the coaching ranks. So that's something that will be interesting to see how they handle this offseason.
Jake, great work this season, and I know we're not done yet, and maybe the offseason's going to be even a bigger deal than the regular season, but thanks for all your work, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Hey, appreciate you, fella. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there it is. Jake Hutchinson, our man on the Niners beat. And just talking to him and the line of questioning that we just threw out there, almost all of it was about how would you change this and how would you change that? And is this guy going to be back? And is that guy going to be back? And who's available out there? I just had a moment because this was such a game that was circled on everyone's calendar the second that the schedule came out. And the fact that we're sitting here right now on the second to last night of 2024, going into a Lions-Niners game where Lions fans and Niners fans are literally having drinks together, just chatting, because they're like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, it doesn't really even matter what the final score is tonight. It is bananas. I can't believe that this is the way this all went.
Yeah, when we found out that this was the second to last game on the schedule, I think a lot of us thought, oh, winner of that game might be the one seed.
Yeah.
There's a lot on the line here.
The line.
And one team held up their end of the bargain for that.
Sure did.
But even then, with that, it does not matter if they win or lose this football game.
I know. Found a way. Although Dan Campbell refuses to believe that or hear that, he's going to go all out in this game.
I think we have sound from Dan Campbell. I think the guys in the back have it ready. Dan Campbell talking about how they want to win this game. Guys, if you haven't, fire it off. Dan Campbell wants to win this game still.
I'll make this easy for everybody. That way all the critics can jump out and start attacking. But that way you don't have to debate them anymore. We're bringing everything we got to this game, and we are playing, and I don't care what it looks like and where it's at or who's this, who's that. We're going out to play and win this game out on the West Coast. There you go.
There it is.
Sounds like Dan Campbell.
It sounds exactly like Dan Campbell. And I'll just tell you, like, this is one of those things, and I've got no criticisms for the guy. I think he's done an unbelievable job in changing the culture. Obviously, his openness to creativity. You've got the Lions out there. Jared Goff is faking falling over and all of these plays that they're running. I think he deserves a ton of credit for everything that has gone on with the team. But, well, look, we've already watched it once, and it's funny to me how many people would be like, well, the Lions are going out there to avenge what happened last year. They're not. It doesn't matter. They could win by 40 tonight, and you don't avenge anything. You still didn't go to the Super Bowl. And so I get it. I understand why everyone loves the guy. At the same time, you are, every year you go into the playoffs, you are running the risk of making the wrong call at the wrong time, and I'm not guessing because we already watched it. He has gone to the playoffs once, and he literally punted the game away to the 49ers, or should I say didn't punt enough. Like, he didn't kick the ball enough. And so, you know, I just don't think that you go into anything in life with only one pitch. And Dan's got one pitch. It's a great pitch. But if somebody hits it out of the park, you lose, brother.
I know this isn't a Campbell versus Shanahan conversation, but I would also say I feel like Shanahan goes into situations like that with one pitch. His one pitch is the exact other extreme.
Interesting.
And it is ultra conservative. Not taking risks. And it is punting or kicking, trying a 50-yard field goal when your kicker is kind of iffy instead of going for it on fourth and two.
No, that's all fair. It's a fair criticism. I do think he's gone for it on fourth down a lot more this year in certain spots. These things are always easy to sort of, like, hindsight being 20/20. I hear you. I would love to, for Kyle to loosen it up at times, and he clearly needs to make adjustments. But specifically come playoff time, I really wonder what Dan's got for us this year.
Same thing as last year.
And he's got a defense that is very compromised, and they're going to be going against very high-powered offenses. Like the Lions, if they do get that one seed, really good chance that the first team they see come to town is like a Commanders or a Vikings or a Packers or something like that. It's going to be somebody who can come in and sling it. And
seems like even more reason to go for it on fourth down.
Maybe.
To keep the ball away from the opposing offense and to put more points on the board.
Maybe. Unless it doesn't. And so, again, I know everybody's allergic to field goals. They would have put the Lions in the Super Bowl last year
if
they had kicked them. You know? All right. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. If you got anything to say Lions and Niners related, let's do it. 888-957-9570. We'll also start to transition back to Golden State Warriors basketball. The Kuminga question, how to finish the puzzle for the Warriors as they get ready with the Cavs in town tonight, a game that you'll hear right here. Grandy is in for Dibs. It's Willard and Dibs.
And Dibs.
I walked over here supposedly as a tough guy.
He just told a story. He just
just told a story. That's just it.
Ronnie, have you done that?
On 95.7 The Game.
Oh, man, the great Ronnie Lott gives us all the feels, and the crowd is making the pilgrimage into Levi's Stadium. For the last time this year, the kickoff show presented by Habas Law. You've been wrong. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabasLaw.com. Dubs fans, a really big, long-ranging conversation has been planned for 10 minutes from now with the voice of the Dubs, Tim Roy. Kind of a state of the union, if you will, of the Warriors addressing everything. That's what we're planning to talk to him about. We'll do that in 10 minutes, so stay tuned for that. I will say, as we enter this football game, though, Mark, I like Grandy's in for Dibs. I don't know why, but for some reason, I still find something about this game that matters. And it's not even necessarily the final score, because the more people we talk to who are on their way in, everybody is doing the exact same thing. They're just telling each other what they need in fantasy tonight. That's all anyone's doing. Oh, I need Amon-Ra to get 18 points, and this person over here's got Purdy, and this person has Debo, Jahmyr Gibbs. It's literally like a big fantasy football party has started here in Santa Clara, because the outcome of the game doesn't matter. But man, Grandy, I'm with Kyle Shanahan a little bit that I would like to see the San Francisco 49ers just do better. Do figure some things out. And maybe this week, and if they even play their starters next week, maybe that can be step one into whatever they need to do to fix what ailed them this year.
I hear you. I would like the offense to look a little better and smoother, and if they can do that with this offensive line, that could be saying something, and maybe someone that we've never heard of on the offensive line introduces themselves, and maybe that's a future piece for you down the road. I would want them to look good, but I'm rooting for them to lose. Because
I get that. Because I really do. I get it.
Get a better draft pick.
Sure.
Maybe you get one of the premier tackles in the draft. Maybe you get a good defensive lineman. And that is a piece that legitimately makes you a better football team next year as a result of losing this.
Listen,
game.
We talk about it a lot less when it's in the neighborhood of 12, 13, or 14 than we do with, say, what the New York Giants did yesterday.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
What the Raiders have done the last 2 weeks.
The fans are looking at each other going, what the hell are we doing?
Why are we winning games?
Why
now?
Is Drew Locke scoring 42 points in a football game?
Some Colts. What are you doing? Oh my God.
I mean, if you're Shedeur Sanders, how do you feel about what took place yesterday? Nobody knows marketing better than the Sanders family. And New York is sitting there waiting for you. And it might have just turned into Nashville, Tennessee. Like, that's what happened yesterday.
Also, quarterbacks go to die with the Giants, too.
Fair. But, you know, you got Malik Nabers. You got your guy already there. Like, that could have been interesting, and I'm not saying it's a dead issue. But you've got – and Cleveland is looming. Do you want to end up there? Literally quarterback graveyard. Baker Mayfield is slinging the ball 5 touchdown passes, and Cleveland's looking at it going, well, we picked Deshaun Watson. I mean, it's crazy. So I get where you're coming from on that. Let me throw a scenario at you, all right? So the Lions are up 27-26, and Jake Moody is lining up from 48 yards with 2 seconds to go.
I'm waving it wide left.
Okay.
Miss it. Shank it.
You're rooting for it
Shank
to miss.
Shank it. Yes.
Okay.
I'll, just for the sake of entertainment, doink it. Miss it off the upright.
I mean, think of all that goes into that, though. You know, like you were just asking Hutch about Jake Moody's future. I don't know, man. Like, this for me is one of those moments where the rational and the irrational start fighting with one another. Because I totally get what you're saying, that it probably makes more sense. The Niners are supposed to lose tonight. Go ahead and lose tonight. I think there is a very, it's not even just draft position. It's who's going to get that fourth place schedule next year. Yep. This is a fun exercise, Niner fans. Go look at what is slated to be the NFC West fourth place schedule. I'm not kidding you. There is not one hard game. Not one. You will play, and I look, they're football games, so I'm not saying they'd go undefeated. My point is, you do not have one game on the schedule that would lay out as like, oh, a road trip to Kansas City. Oh, we got to go to Baltimore. Oh, look, the Bills are coming to town on Sunday. None of that. It's literally none of that. Your hardest opponent would be the Houston Texans. That's it. The Houston Texans, who are 9-7. That's your hardest opponent next year. So I get what you're saying, man. Grab that fourth place schedule and have a season. So I get it. I just don't know if I'm wired to root for them to lose.
Yeah, so you'll play, obviously, your division teams twice. You will play the corresponding team in where you finish in your division for the divisions in the NFC East and the AFC North.
That's so if the you finish, Giants and Browns.
If you finish last, you'll be playing those two teams. And then you play everybody in the NFC and AFC South, which you could argue two of the worst divisions in football.
There is a 9-7 team, and are the Bucs also 9-7? There are two 9-7 teams. Yep. Those are the only teams over 500 in the entire league.
You get to play the Panthers, you get to play the Saints, you get to play
the Titans,
yep.
The Colts,
yep.
The Jags. That's who you're playing next year if you lose out.
Lose!
Although, by the way, it's true if you just lose next week.
Because the Cardinals are the team you're vying with
Correct.
For last place.
So yep. There you go. So you can go and win this one.
No,
doesn't matter.
Better draft pick. Lose tonight. Lose next
12th
Sunday.
Pick, 14th pick, whatever. Whatever.
If they get the 14th pick, they'll probably pick another wide receiver because the offensive lineman they really wanted went one pick ahead of them. And they don't reach in the first round.
If he's a stud, then you'll love having him.
Yeah, we're picking a wide receiver who works so well for him this time.
Be nice to Ricky Pearsall. He's had a hard year. You're not down on Ricky, are you?
No, but have you looked at what some of the other receivers around him have done this year?
Well, around him, meaning what? First round? Or
Ricky Pearsall went 31.
Yes.
Ladd McConkey went three picks later at 34.
Okay.
He's have a 1,000 yards and five-plus touchdowns.
Very, very good.
Oh, my God.
Xavier Worthy went a couple of picks ahead of him. He's had a much better end of the season, five-plus touchdowns, almost 600 yards now.
Oh, my God.
A lot of it is Ricky Pearsall and what has happened off the field.
And
I know that.
And he's joining a team that did not have starting aspirations for him this year.
No doubt.
Ladd McConkey joined a team that literally caught both of their receivers.
As it turns out, though, you could have used help from a first-round pick at other spots.
I'm not arguing it. I just think your point in this moment is a little circumstantial.
Maybe we see Ricky Pearsall tonight.
I would love that.
See him in a big way the last couple
that.
Of games.
I would love that. The wide receiver room for me is actually where the intrigue lies this offseason. I know that all of the talk is going to be about quarterback. I understand that. I know that the 49ers need a much better offensive line, and there's a Dre Greenlaw contract to figure out. All these things are absolutely worth our time. The wide receiver room is the one that I look at right now and I go, I have no idea. In fact, Ricky Pearsall and I guess Juwan Jennings are the only two that I'm like, I know exactly where they're going to be week one. You know, assuming nobody gets shot. Mm-hmm. I know where those two are going to be. I don't know if Debo's going to be on the team, and I'm pretty sure that Brandon Ayuk will be inactive that day. So, and what else do you do around it? I don't know, man. That's one thing that I'm watching this offseason.
It's just so sad that we're at a spot where we're at the end of the year and there's nothing left to play for. I was just looking back at the schedule from last year. A year ago today, we were busy reacting to the Christmas Day loss against the Ravens.
Yep.
All those interceptions and how bad that was. But they still had a chance to clinch the one seed with a win in Washington against the Commanders and getting a little bit of help from Kyler Murray and the Cardinals who were in Philly. Both those things happened, and they were busy celebrating the one seed, a bye through the first round of the postseason, and 365 days later, we're sitting here talking about a Monday Night Football game against the team that you beat,
yep.
Came back from 17 down to the NFC title game last year, and now this game suddenly means absolutely nothing.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. All right.
It's sad. You only get so many of these games every year, and it's meaningless.
No joke. And the Lions are 3.5 3.5-point favorite tonight. We mentioned it earlier. Dibs says take the Lions, so Cuckoosh. Go ahead and fade the Dibs. Cuckoosh, yeah. And then do you need anything tonight? I feel like before Tim joins, we should put something out into the universe if you need something. Do you need something
I'm
tonight?
Unfortunately out in
or
my
you've been eliminated
leagues.
Of everything.
I'm not in a title
okay,
game. I put up 170 in the semis, and an opponent put up 180.
You didn't lay a bunch of money on the Niners or anything? Like, you have nothing cooking? You're just going in there to eat. That's literally
I'm
it?
I'm just going in there to eat.
All right. Yeah. That's fine. All right. Good luck. Go in there and have
I don't need luck. I'm going to get that job done.
I'm pretty sure that's going to work out for you. All right. That sounds good. I need 4.5 points from Juwan Jennings and the Lions kicker, Jake Bates.
I don't want to jinx to it, win, but you feel win. Pretty safe.
Oh, and this is not safe. I'm going to lose to Guru in the third place game in our league.
Oh, no.
Unless Amon-Ra St. Brown gets 38 points. He's done it twice this year.
It would be fun to watch.
He's done it twice.
But I wouldn't count on it.
Even the Niner defense could probably stop him from doing that.
Probably.
Maybe. All right. Here comes Tim Roy. He's going to join us here momentarily, the voice of the Dubs, with a far, far-ranging conversation we're planning. State of the Warriors as we get ready for the best team in the NBA coming to town tonight. Cleveland is here. Warriors Live is in.